As always. So good morning.
Good morning.
I am Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm happy to be back here standing near my lectern and seeing your gorgeous faces again. Happy New Year. Yeah, it is 2016. And I'll tell you, I'm feeling a little dizzy already looking at how many days of this month have passed already. I sometimes wonder why we bother putting all that Christmas stuff away, because, you know, it just happens again so soon. At any rate, we are starting several brand new things here. And one of the things I'm so excited to share with you is that there is something new that really hasn't ever happened before is unfolding with Centers for Spiritual Living. And that is, and I think I gave you a little hint of this before the holidays, but more than 100 of our centers have gotten together, agreed to follow a theme through the year that supports our Global Heart Vision. And our Global Heart Vision is this glorious writing that we will be actually placing an abbreviated form of. It is going to go on that wall right there, and then we're going to have a surprise that pops over on this wall to counter it. And all this stuff is in the works, and I'm really excited about it. And the theme of the Global Heart Vision is, anybody know? A world that works for everybody. Sometimes I like to say a world that works for all, because it really is about all living beings. You know, we have evolved so much in our consciousness that now we really have this great consideration for, like, the animal kingdom. So much more than we ever have before. And we have this great call to be kinder to each other. And we have this great courageous thing where a bunch of us are standing up for peace in ways we've never done before. And it's not about carrying just signs. It's about being willing to be that peace. So, amen. Yes. Yep, let me hear a big one. Amen. So I'm thrilled. Several of sort of key ministers in our movement, Reverend David Alexander, Reverend Edward Villune, Reverend Kathy Ann Lewis, Reverend David Bruner, from all over the place, and lots more. But they got together. They had this great idea. What if we all got on the same page and we did the same thing, and every month we had a theme? Now, all of us ministers will be chatting about those themes in our own ways, so they won't be all that similar. No matter where you go, you're going to hear it a little bit different, because we all have different ideas, and we all serve different communities. And when we're really in the zone, we will intuit what it is that our community needs to hear, or what is the call or the theme that needs to be ours. So it's going to be fun, because we can still be really creative, and yet, what thrills me is that that means that thousands of like-minded thinkers are going to be doing the same thing. We're all going to be focusing on learning how to imagine in our own minds, to keep fresh in our own thinking, the possibility that we can live to see a world that works for everyone. I'm just very excited about it. Now, in addition to having this great big theme that we're sharing, and by the way, we got on board. I was resistant at first when I started reading about it. It's like, yeah, I can't give somebody else's talk. And then I realized, well, I don't have to. That's not what they're asking us to do. We have a monthly theme, and if we just, you know, create a talk around that theme, we're going to be in unison in that. And so I dragged my feet, and then suddenly they were into the F in the 90s of centers that had signed up. And they said, you know, we're hoping to make 100. And then I scrambled. It's like, I want to be in that 100. And I enlisted the help of Chris Lockman, and I said, help me do this. Help me do this. You know, we have to do it in our integrity. We have to be able to do it in our own way. And so then the deeper that we dug, Chris and I, we found out that we really did want to be a part of this. And what number were we, Chris? We were 99 in getting in the game there. But since then, I got to tell you, they're not counting anymore. They haven't said. But a whole bunch of ministers on the ministers' listserv, we all communicate on this great email thing. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's interesting. Because we all are ministers and do think we're all right, you know. And I just don't mean okay, all right. I mean, well, you get the picture. At any rate, a lot of ministers are jumping on board now and saying, gosh, I feel really bad that I dragged my feet. And just so you all know, we're playing too. My community will be doing this along with you. So by the time we're complete, I think it's taking on its own natural evolution, and it's very exciting. Now, in addition to that, we always have an annual theme here at the center, and our theme this month is This Is the Day. And so I pulled out this old piece of music that I have loved for a long time, and that was the music you heard before the service today. And it'll be really easy to learn the words because there's just a lot of "This is the day," and it repeats a lot, you know. And I sing it, and I don't sing it well, so you'll want to remind me to keep my mic off when I'm singing, and you'll want to sing louder than me as you get excited about it. But it's the kind of music that makes me want to dance. It makes me want to move because I think the theme is valuable to us because, indeed, as we follow that idea that this is the day, if I can wake up at any given moment and remember that this is the day that God made this day just for me, you know, and I can rejoice and I can be glad in it. Now my whole perspective of how that day is going to unfold will change. And the title of my message this morning is, to tie that all together, A Center of Possibility. You know, my personal mission statement that I developed long before I was a minister, as I moved into being a licensed practitioner, I developed a mission statement that said, I am a center of possibility, midwifing souls and communities into their wholeness. So I've been saying that as my personal statement for a very long time. And I think it's time for us to realize that, you know what, you are the center of your own world. You know, it really is true that we are the center of our own world. And when we own that and when we put a spiritual attitude around it, wow, the center of our world is a good thing. So I'm going to be talking about that in lots of ways this morning. And I found a theme quote from the founder of this philosophy, The Science of Mind. I found a theme quote in one of our classic, well-loved books by Ernest Holmes, and that is, This Thing Called You. What a delightful read that is. By the way, good call on the reading this morning, right out of the message. I was very excited to hear you doing that. The quote that I'm going to read comes from that book, This Thing Called You, and these are the words of our founder. You must maintain a close communion with your true center. Your creative power is not an act of will. It is rather an act of your willingness to believe. To believe. You must maintain a close communion with your true center. I love that statement. You know, that close communion with your true center. Everything happens from within. There is that indwelling presence that we talk about and that we teach. And so there are all these basic ideas that I wanted to sort of expand in sort of an introductory way. It's my first time in 2016 at my most favorite lectern, and I was thinking while I was looking at that idea of a center of possibility, what am I going to say around that, and how does this fit with that, and putting it all together like a gorgeous puzzle. It's beautiful and divine when you match the pieces properly, when you let God do the matching. And I reflected on, a couple years ago, there was a conversation amongst the ministers on the internet, and the question put out to us was, what do you think are the most important five things we teach in this philosophy? And it was no surprise, they did not come up with the same five things. That each person that contributed had a slightly different idea about what those five things were. Look at Reverend Noli right now. She's thinking, what would my five things be, right? Am I right? Absolutely. And so that's what I did, Reverend Noli. I did that. I said, I'm going to announce what I think my five things are. And by the way, Paula, this one's for you, baby. I'm glad you're here today. The first thing that came to my mind, I thought, what's the most important thing? So I kind of put them in a prioritized order of what I think we teach is most important. And the first thing that popped into my mind is there is one God. There is one God. There is one power. There is one presence. There is one life. There is one creator of all things. Yes, yes. There is only that one. And in that idea of one creator of all things, we see that we are all created through that one. So we are created in the image and likeness of that one, of that one presence, that power, that life. And what that means to me is we are created with this great ability to be creative beings. And so the first and most important thing I teach is that. It is like the first step to spiritual mind treatment when we're teaching affirmative prayer. It's recognition. You got to recognize that God is. And in all the ways you can conjure images of what that means in your mind, each of us will have a very different idea of what that is. It won't matter. Because the important thing is that we get together, we get unified in that idea that there's only one, one presence, one power, one creator of all things, and we all are here through that and as an expression of that. So we are individualized expressions of the divine. That's number one. Number two, I think it's important, by the way, for those of you who come often and hear the Sunday message, you will not be surprised by the five that I've chosen because I speak to them on a regular basis. But number two, what I thought was next most important for us to consider is that not only is there that power, but it is a power for good. There is a presence and a power in the universe. It's greater than I am, and it is a power for good. Sometimes I forget that. Sometimes I forget that and I get lost in worry and about things that don't look so good that are going on in the world. But when I align myself to that truth that God is and that I am one with God and that that which is God is a power and a presence for good and it's greater than me, whoo, I don't have to figure out all the problems in the world. You know, I mean, that lightens my load just in that one expression. And this power for good supports all of life. It is a constant givingness from God to us. So it's always supportive. It's always feeding and nurturing us and therefore expanding that essence of goodness in our own lives. So because there is a power for good that is expansive, it is all the givingness of God, it is then that example of the way that life itself, if you look out at nature, life itself is always growing and changing, and there's this transformational quality about life itself. And so if we're made in the image and likeness of that, then it would be, of course, true of our own experience of living. That in our own experience of living, we're always going to be changing. We're always going to have the opportunity for these transformational experiences as we imitate the divine life in our own livingness. So it's never shrinking. It's never limited. It's always more, or as Reverend Cheryl likes to say, gooder and gooder. So we got one power. We know that that power is good. And then I think that the third, from my perspective, the third most important thing to really anchor me in to that truth right now is that idea of the omnipresence. You know, we got that trinity of the omnis. You know, we got the all-knowing, we got the all-ever-present, and we got the all-powerful. And so the omnipresence is that idea that there's no place that God is not. That God is absolutely right where we are. Right here in this sanctuary, right here in across the street at the Baptist Church, wherever we are, God is right there at the heart of every experience we walk through. Spirit itself present in every relationship we have with another human being. God absolutely fully orbed in every condition or challenge that we walk through, there is no place that God is not. And as I remember that, and as I build on that in such a way, then I begin to think, But more than that, there's that indwelling presence of God within me. And if you take that into, if we're looking at the physical way we're so beautifully created, we can begin to sense that even in every cell of our body, there's this intelligence. It's infinite. This glorious, vast intelligence that knows exactly how to do everything to make this body function. You know, I mean, they're doing some pretty great things with technology now, but they can't do this. You know, they can augment this. I don't really want any of that. But you know, we can do that. There are so many ways now that we can enhance it, and yet there's a living intelligence within us, within every cell of our body. Now, as I take that, there's no place that God is not. I'm feeling empowered in my own life. I'm feeling like I can know how to approach a prayer for my health and my well-being. I had to do some of that over the holidays, as many of you know. And it was a great opportunity for me to use the skills, the practical application of the spiritual principle that we teach. So, number three, right where you are, God is, baby. I promise. That's the way that is. And then moving on into number four, I really then brought in a flavor of the way I am served on this spiritual path. And that is in my remembrance that in God, all things are possible. That the very idea of spirit or this great infinite intelligence of the universe, that creates infinite possibilities. That's why there's no two of us alike. Your twins are not identical, I don't think. No? Okay. But even I noticed that I don't watch this normally, but we were changing the channels and that 8K lady, she has eight kids. Yeah, whatever that is. I noticed that the kids are big now. I remember it was a big deal when it was on the news. And that she looks at them and calls them all by name. She totally knows who's who, you know? And so we're all, even when we're alike, we're different. We're unique. We're individualized expressions in this glorious, glorious way, infinitely different one from the other. So because in God there exists this infinite potential, then also in my life and in your life, there exists infinite possibility for you too, for all of us. Amen. Amen. Oh, so it's always about getting back to that, that which is in the center, as Holmes was saying, to go to that close communion with your true center. I was going to stop there at four because really that was quite enough. But then I thought, no, I have to have five. What would my fifth be? And I decided for me it would have to be that passage that we get from Jesus, that it is done unto you as you believe. Because that seems to be, for me, that is the link as to how I can use this. I then get to be, notice I'm saying, I then get to be responsible for my stuff, for the way I think and the way I move through life. Now, I would say to you that if you take classes here or if you come regularly and sit in any of our discussion groups or Sunday mornings here, that what you begin to see is that everything we do is sort of an invitation to have a sort of different view of what God is, to redefine what we believe about God. And that is a great beginning. That is a great place to begin so that we're no longer just attached to that idea that God, if we're created in that image, God must look like us, you know, except it's typically a masculine gender, I just notice. But even in the goddess culture, you know, we still want the goddesses to be the best of us. It'd be nice if the goddess body would get lovable again, wouldn't it? It's just such beautiful, full, wonderful bodies. So if I put it all together and I look at the way it builds to that possibility and I recognize then that I have to be a center of possibility, if nothing else, just for my own life. But as I begin to really see that and believe that, what happens is the idea, I want you to hear this, the idea of a world that works for all becomes a little easier to imagine. Yes, It's true. It's true. The more we align ourselves to principle, the easier it is to begin to understand what it means to imagine a world that works for everyone. So there are infinite possibilities of how that could outpicture as well. And I think we get into trouble with that word infinite. You know, we're finite beings. We live in physical bodies. And we do have some limitations, though some of us don't realize that, and then other things happen. But infinite is a difficult word for us to comprehend, and that's okay. You know, it gives me some reverence for life. Emerson used the word infinitude. And infinitude is defined as being a state of being without finish. Isn't that lovely? A state of being without finish. So there's always more. There's always more. And that's where I can begin to, I don't have to comprehend what the infinite is or what it means, but when I look at the word infinitude, I that helps me a lot. I like that, that we're always becoming. Is there anybody Swedish? Can you speak with a Swedish accent? I found this fabulous quote that is Judy Baker the only one raised her hand on Swedish? A little bit, Diana? You lived there. Didn't you live in somewhere like that? Oh, well, you know, SW, close. All right, so I found this quote, and it goes so well with the talk, and usually I only choose quotes in which I can pronounce their name, and this one, man, this guy's name is Dag, first name is Dag, Hammarskjold. Oh, you know of this person? I did not know of this person. Say it again. You said it nice. Oh, just like that. You guys did really good. Thanks. Okay, so you may also know then, because he's new to me, he was a Swedish diplomat around the 1950s, and he became the second Secretary General of the United Nations. He must have been an interesting human being, and he's an author. So we have some of his work, and it's a good thing because he was killed in a plane accident when he was 47 years old over the Congo doing his work. And he had a strong belief for peace, and he seems to have, what little I've read about him, he had this beautiful connection to people, and I admire that greatly. But I found this when he was awarded the Nobel Prize, I think it was posthumously. These are his words that fit this topic really gorgeously. In the point of rest, at the center of our being, we encounter a world where all things are at rest in the same way. At the point of rest, at the center of our being, we encounter a world where everything else is at that same place of being at rest. You know what? That's what I do. When I meditate, that's what I'm looking for. When I meditate, I want to sit and I want to let go of all the scurrying and that goes around in my mind, and I want to deepen into that place of being able to feel that peace that is always there because it's the indwelling presence of God itself. I want to touch that place of peace that is not violated by any of the outer effects of our living. So he goes on to say that then, from that place of rest, then a tree can become a mystery, and a cloud might be a revelation, and each person a cosmos of whose riches we can only catch a glimpse. Wow, think of that. You know, I mean, you see the trees every day, maybe even you know the name of the tree, but do you see the tree? Can you see, can you come from that place where you're communing, as Holmes said in that opening quote, communing with the divine, and you see that in that tree is the great mystery of all the things we don't understand, and yet we take for granted. Can you then look at a cloud or an animal, a bird flying in the sky, and have a touch of revelation, of relating to the divine in some exquisite new way that you've never done before? And best of all, you might get a glimpse of another person and see just a glimpse of something that is greater in them that you've never noticed before. That spark of the divine. What a brilliant quote. What gorgeous words. A point of rest at the center of our being. That place where all things, I love how he said the things rest in the same way. Because in that center, in that place, that's where truth abides. That's where the truth remains, and it is always untouched. And it's not our opinions, it's not our beliefs, it's greater than that. It's the truth of our being. And it is also the place of all possibility. Now, in the study of quantum physics, something exciting has happened in the last 20 years or so, and that is that in the study of this idea of quantum physics or quantum mechanics, we have a sort of a marriage among some, anyhow. A sort of, you'll have to know this for one of your exams, Clyde. I'm just putting that out there. You might want to study this. There's a marriage of science and spirit. And what's happening is it's helping us to redefine what God is, because we're looking more at that energetic level of the way things work, the way things are repelled or attracted, and the way we interact and the way we manifest or demonstrate things in our lives. So in the world of this idea of looking at energy and sort of the movement of life and the exchange of things and the interactions of things, we teach that, and they, by the way, the great philosophers have been doing this for a long, long time, and including the sort of contemporary teachers in the day of Ernest Holmes, they have always talked about the way in which God and humankind are the same. That God and humankind are one substance, except that one is liquid and one is solid. So one is liquid, sort of fluid, and the other is solid. And the example that we often use is water and ice. An ice cube is still water. In fact, its composition there's a perfect eternal unity. They cannot be the same, but you can't hold water in your hand. The liquid will just move through, and that's the fluidity is the movement of spirit itself, the energetics of the way life works and moves. And the ice is solid like we are. There's a density. So we are here in this form. And I think that looking at this idea of liquid and solid, especially looking at it from the idea of water and what we can do with water, is so great, because water is a beautiful spiritual metaphor, isn't it? We use it as a metaphor, as a symbol, very often when we're talking about spiritual matters. And so I was thinking about the way that you might travel up to the mountains, and at some point you might find a gorgeous lake. And, you know, we all love bodies of water. We all seem to be fed by sitting near a body of water. And if you see a beautiful lake, it's interesting to see that a natural lake is, you know, imagine that there are mountains, there are these peaks, and then the mountains then, and there are valleys, and then there will be these crevices that will just fill up naturally as the snow melts or the rain comes, and it will form a lake. And sometimes it remains a lake all the time. But Ernest Holmes often said that water will always, how did he say it? Doggone it, I was doing so good. Water will always naturally falls by its own weight. So you have a lake, and then it was a big snowfall or a huge rain. What happens is there will be a capacity to what that lake can hold, and then there will be an overflow. And the water will naturally obey the gravitational force that will pull it down the mountain. So we have streams and creeks, and maybe even rivers will form toward the bottom, right? Big bodies of flowing, moving water. And so there are just these natural laws that work in connection to water. And then I was thinking that, you know, we then, humankind, as we develop the ability to reason and to observe nature and use some of the lessons we learn from nature, it wasn't long before people figured out that the movement of water could help them in terms of pulling power out of the water. So they made this, we used to live in Arkansas near a gosh, that was so long ago. There was a place called War Eagle Mill, and it was gorgeous. And it was this really pretty building that was on the side of a small river, and they put a water wheel in there. And the water, as the water moves, the water's channeled to go through by the building, and the big water wheel then is moving. It turns, it makes the movement of the water alone, the power that's there just in the movement of the water, turns the wheel, and then inside the mill they were, I don't know, what were they doing, honey, grinding, making flour and stuff. I don't know. So they, with this genius, humankind intuited how to take that power out of the moving water. And then now look what we do. Now we build dams, and we have all these fancy hydraulic systems so that we can intentionally pull the power out of the moving water, and we then use generators and machinery and stuff to create electricity. And then we channel that electricity out so that we all can have it in our, so that we can recharge all our fancy devices, apparently. So there's this great way we intuit how to tap into that power. But here's the deal. The generator that changes the power into a usable source, the generator is not the power. The generator is not the power. It's just a tool. It's just something that we use to have usable power. The power is already there. It's a device. It is the power that comes from the natural movement of the water that we find a way to sort of catch and then use in a way that serves us so that it can be transformed and distributed and all of that. Now, if I it's funny, I write this stuff and then I ponder it, you know? It's like, so then I was thinking, but yeah, let's go back to the lake. Let's go back to the lake, and let's imagine that we have taken our family to the lake for a play day. We're just going to have an enjoyable experience at the lake today. And what do you see? The surface of the lake is calm, and it's beautiful, and we can swim in the lake. We can maybe push a boat out on the lake and do a little fishing, and we discover that there's life under the surface of the water. And then maybe if it's a really pristine location, we could even drink the water. And maybe somebody, one of our family members, is sitting on the side of the lake and painting a beautiful picture of the luscious scenery. And all the time in that lake is all that power that is just there waiting to be used. And we are just like that. That indwelling presence within us, that is where the power, all the power resides there, waiting for us to tap into it. So when we say there's a power and a presence, it's in me, it expresses as me, it moves through me, but it is not me, it is something that is greater than I am, and this is where we get the freedom to know that we don't have to be out there fixing the world. But we are invited to do our work so that we can go deep, so that we can tap into that power that is there and be invigorated and refreshed and have the things that we need and know how to use the skills and the practical application of spiritual principles. Because in that power, in that place of communion, of silence, of resting in the quiet, as we have said in so many ways this morning, that is where the divine guidance lies. That is how great people have intuited many great things that we use to our advantage. So in that quiet, seemingly quiet lake is a powerful force with infinite possibilities, and the same is true of each and every one of us. Within us is that same power.